We have seen this movie before. Newt Gingrich becomes the not Romney of the moment and starts in with that swagger.
I think grandiose thoughts. This is a grandiose country of big people doing big things, and we need leadership prepared to take on big projects. I'd be quite happy to have a three-hour Lincoln-Douglas-style debate with Barack Obama. I'd let him use a teleprompter. I'll just rely on knowledge. We'll do fine. If there's anything in there that is going to help us lose the election, we should know it before the nomination. And if there's nothing in there, why not release it? I mean, the story is false. Every personal friend I have who knew us in that period says the story was false. We offered several of them to ABC to prove it was false. They weren't interested because they would like to attack any Republican. I think the destructive, vicious, negative nature of much of the news media makes it harder to govern this country, harder to attract decent people to run for public office. And I am appalled that you would begin a presidential debate on a topic like that.
A Newt Gingrich montage from last night's debate. Good morning, everyone. We will hear from the other candidates, too, on this day before the South Carolina primary. Don't worry, you'll get your Santorum fix. Washington Post blogger and national political correspondent Nia Malika Henderson is in Columbia, South Carolina, and joins us now. Her article today begins with Gingrich getting his swagger back. And hi, Nia. Thanks for taking some time, and I'm sure a very busy morning for you. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey there. It's great to be here.
It was something to see the final four up there last night, wasn't it, after this whole parade of candidates? Now it's Romney, Santorum, Gingrich, and Paul, and no matter what you think of them, by now pretty well known and each being very much themselves.
Yes, it's down to the final four now, a much more nimble environment for these final candidates to make their points. And there you had Newt Gingrich right off the bat, as you said. He had a lot of swagger last night. He's gotten his groove back in many ways. He came to South Carolina not really knowing what his argument was going to be against Mitt Romney, and he ran into some trouble making this argument against Bain. But he really has done himself a world of good in these last debates. I was with him yesterday at a couple of campaign stops, and you could really feel the energy, and you could feel and see that people had seen those debates, and they talked about those debates, and those moments in those debates where he was bringing those crowds to their feet. He got several standing ovations last night. He very much understands these crowds. He's almost like a Baptist preacher up there. He understands call and response, and he's always surveying the crowd looking for those amens, and in that way, he really has surged. And I think Mitt Romney, you've seen his campaign really ramp up their attacks, not so much on stage, but certainly in the background. He's had a lot of conference calls from surrogates really tearing in to Newt Gingrich, calling him unstable, calling him a narcissist, saying that he's undisciplined. So they have really ramped up those attacks because they see that this thing is really tightening.
And the last poll that I saw was yesterday morning, which had Romney at 37, Gingrich at 30, and then Perry dropped out, and he had 4% in that poll. And in Doris Gingrich, that doesn't mean that'll all necessarily accrue to him. But as you note in your piece, primary voters have had their reasons to doubt Gingrich and how quickly people seem to forget from his attack on Mitt Romney for Bain Capital, which has been widely criticized by conservatives as a liberal anti-capitalist line, to his revolving line of credit at Tiffany's. Remember, he's a rich guy, too. To his global warming video with Nancy Pelosi, to his personal life, to his sheer nastiness, which gets him negatives among a lot of voters. So I wonder what you see as you're traveling around the state as the essence of why voters are dismissing all of that in the numbers they apparently are.
They want this thing to go on. Sarah Palin came out and she gave an endorsement. Obviously, Todd Palin gave an endorsement. And then you had Rick Perry really articulating, in some ways absolving, I think, Newt Gingrich of some of these problems that he's had with his marriages and the scrutiny over that, basically saying that he's been forgiven, that this is it within the Christian tradition, this whole conversion narrative. So that was, I think, even more important for Rick Perry to say than this 4% support that he might give. But people, I think, want this thing to go on. They want wanted to go to Florida. They also say that this would, if it goes on, that it would ultimately make Mitt Romney a stronger candidate, that he needs more betting, that he needs more back and forth with these other candidates so he can strengthen his position. But it, oddly, as we've seen, I mean, he's been stumbling in those debates. The conventional wisdom on Mitt Romney is that he's a really, really strong debater, but in many ways over these last couple of debates, especially around the tax problem, he has really stumbled to get together a really clear, concise answer, and we saw last night that he was booed on stage.
And then there is Rick Santorum, who must be tearing his hair out, saying, no, wait, I'm the real not Mitt. So here is Santorum from last night's debate trying to remind voters of what's the matter with Newt.
Newt's a friend. I love him. But at times, you just got to, you know, sort of that, you know, worrisome moment that something's going to pop. And we can't afford that a nominee. We need someone. I'm not the most flamboyant. I don't get the biggest applause lines here. But I'm steady. I'm solid. I'm not going to go out and do things that you're going to worry about.
Worried that Newt Gingrich is going to pop. And I guess everybody can attach their own meaning to what that actually signifies. But, Nia, as you travel around South Carolina, why not Rick Santorum? He won Iowa, sort of. He's the more consistent conservative. He's a true leader in religious and cultural conservatism. And he doesn't have Gingrich's nasty and volatile reputation. And yet Santorum is only getting half the support Gingrich has in that latest poll. What's the disconnect?
I think the disconnect is you mentioned this angry, volatile personality that has in some ways been on display from Newt Gingrich. People want that. People always talk about wanting somebody on stage next to Obama who is a pit bull who can take it to Obama. And you see, even if you look last night at Santorum's debate, there's something that is a little tentative about his presentation. He looks a little nervous. I don't know if he's got – it's almost as if the closer he gets to being a front runner or a serious contender, the more nervous he's gotten. It reminds me of that caricature on Saturday Night Live where Adam Sandberg always plays him as the scary guy, the guy who's scared of everything. And in some ways, last night I saw that in his presentation, in his tentative responses sometimes. And that's what you hear people say as well, that he needs more experience. It's not his time this time. Maybe it'll be his time 4 years from now, 8 years from now. But for now, they see him as a little too green and certainly not as bold and big and grand or grandiose, whatever word you want to use, as Newt Gingrich.
Nia Malika Henderson, national political correspondent for The Washington Post, joining us from Columbia, South Carolina. Your article yesterday was about how the airwaves and people's mailboxes are now saturated with political ads in South Carolina. What are you seeing?
Yes, they are everywhere. These ads, wall to wall. If you're watching Days of Our Lives on Channel 10 here, you can't escape all of these ads. Most of them are negative. From Newt Gingrich, you've got this super PAC, so they're trying to portray Mitt Romney as a Massachusetts moderate who could never win. You've got Paul going after everybody in one ad, saying Santorum is an earmarker, saying Mitt's a moderate, and that Gingrich is a serial hypocrite. So they're very, very vicious. And then under the radar, you have these calls that are being made and mailings as well. And the calls are mainly just people who will ring your phone and say good things about Mitt Romney, notably in the upstate especially, that he is pro-gun, that he is pro-life, and that he is a real true conservative. And that upstate area will be really important for any of these guys who want that conservative vote. So they have been inundated with these calls and with these messages. Candidates.
How widely are people seeing that half-hour documentary attacking Mitt Romney's record at Bain Capital produced by the pro-Gingrich super PAC? Is that on TV? Is it only online? Are lots of people actually watching it?
It seems to mainly be online. It's gotten, I think last I checked, something like 700,000, 800,000 hits online. It hasn't been widely seen on the air here. I know his super PAC had tried to buy some time to put it on the air, but I haven't seen it actually on the air yet. But again, it's certainly online, and it's certainly been a part of the conversation. But again, Newt Gingrich, when he tried that line of attack early on, when he first came here right after New Hampshire, people weren't really buying it. They actually bought Mitt Romney's argument that it was an attack on capitalism, an attack on free enterprise. So he stepped back from that. And his main argument is, come on, conservatives, let's rally, let's coalesce around on Newt Gingrich's candidacy and beat Mitt Romney. That's the argument that he's making. He says now that if he wins in South Carolina, he can win this whole thing, sounding like the candidate 6 weeks ago who said that he had a pretty good chance of winning the nomination.
Now, here is Romney from the debate last night in an uncomfortable moment. And I missed part of this question. Nia, maybe you saw it. Did the moderator refer to Mitt Romney's father, George, when he was running for president?
Exactly. That's what happened. And George Romney actually released 12 years of his tax returns when he ran, and it was unprecedented at the time. And his argument was that, yeah, sure, you can release 1 year or 2 years, and in that way, if you did that, you could sort of fix your tax returns and make them look a certain way. But if you release 12 years, then you could really find out how this person approached their taxes and what their income was.
So are you going to do what your father did, Mitt Romney?
Maybe.
You know, I don't know how many years I'll release. I'll take a look at what our documents are, and I'll release multiple years. I don't know how many years, but I'll be happy to do that. And let me tell you, I know there are some who are very anxious to see if they can't make it more difficult for a campaign to be successful. I know the Democrats want to go after the fact that I've been successful. I'm not going to apologize for being successful.
Now, that's being generated by Gingrich, too, isn't it? Gingrich released his tax returns yesterday just before the debate and is challenging Romney to do so during the primary process.
Right. It's being generated by Gingrich. But also, let's face it, Chris Christie, who is one of Mitt Romney's top surrogates, was on air a couple of days ago saying that he should release his tax returns, too. What you're hearing from this campaign is that there is some worry about what these tax forms actually reveal, primarily around the fact that Mitt Romney has donated a lot of money to the Mormon Church. And here is a state that is obviously heavily evangelical, very conservative, and so there's concern about what impression that would give that he has given so much of his money in the form of tithes. Let's face it, and a lot of people obviously tithe to their churches 10% or whatever. So that's part of the concern. But I think what it does is it underscores this narrative, this story about Mitt Romney, that he's hiding something, that he is a rich guy, and that perhaps he's gotten some tax breaks, and he came out already to say that he pays 15% because he doesn't have a job. He gets all of his money based on investments and this Cayman Islands account. So that's, I think they're also feeding into that impression by being so, let's face it, cagey about these tax returns. But there is some underlying conversation in the campaign about what the impression might be among voters if they see that he's given so much money to the Mormon Church.
Anything interesting emerging from the Gingrich tax return since he made a show of releasing it last night? Have you had a chance to look?
So he made about, $3.1 million. It looks like he paid about 31% in taxes, about $900,000 in taxes. And this is all earned income. So, of course, on earned income, you make you pay a higher tax rate. And that's probably the most interesting thing. I admit I haven't had a chance to scrub them. I'll get to that maybe today. But I think more than anything, he was trying to do that to make a political point, to push Mitt Romney into a corner, and in some ways make the argument that he was trying to make around Bain Capital, saying that this is a guy who's very wealthy and is in some ways benefited from that in terms of the tax structure, and that maybe he isn't the guy that you want in your living room. Maybe he isn't the guy that you'd want to share a beer with. And I also think that Newt Gingrich down here is benefiting from being a Southerner. In these crowds, people are comfortable with him. They like him. I've seen him at a black church. I've seen him, with the pickup truck crowd. I've seen him with the patent leather, penny loafer crowd, and he always fits in. It's because he's a Southerner, and he gets these folks, and they very well relate to him, and they want to see him do well. So we'll see. If he comes in a strong second, I think he can make the argument that he should stay in this thing much longer.
The Gingrich tax return, according to the Wall Street Journal article on it today, doesn't seem to have any real bombshells in it. As you say, $3.1, $3.2 million last year. It's a lot of income for somebody who's trying to run against Romney as the rich guy.
Yeah, that's right. But, I mean, compared to Mitt Romney, that guy's poor, Newt Gingrich. I mean, Mitt Romney's got a fortune of about $250 million, you know. And, of course, Ron Paul came out last night that he would to say that he would be embarrassed to release his tax forms because he just doesn't make that much money. But I do think that Mitt Romney has landed on a pretty good argument here, this whole idea that he's not going to apologize for his success. I think that's a pretty good line and that we'll hear very often as this thing goes on.
And because Gingrich made his money from various businesses, what the Journal says is mostly family-owned or family-affiliated businesses, unlike Romney, who's got his paper investments producing most of his income, Gingrich's effective income tax rate was about 31.5%. So that's double the effective income tax rate of Mitt Romney. It certainly might play in the general election when you look at those kinds of disparities in the way people pay taxes. And they list his occupation as consultant and his wife's as executive. There was $19,000 in alimony payments, $81,000 donated to charity. So a few of the things from Newt Gingrich's tax return. Probably no bombshells there from a political standpoint. I want to play one clip of Ron Paul from last night's debate. We haven't gotten to him yet. And I thought this was an interesting moment. The pro-life candidates pointed out that Paul only has a 50% so-called pro-life record as a member of Congress. And here is Ron Paul's explanation as to why.
But it is true that we have a disagreement on how we approach it. I follow what my understanding is of the Constitution, and it does allow for the states to deal with difficult problems. Matter of fact, it allows the states to deal with almost all the problems if you look at it. It is not given, these powers aren't given to the Congress. I see abortion as a violent act. All other violence is handled by the states. Murder, burglary, violence, that's a state issue. So don't try to say that I'm less pro-life because I want to be particular about the way we do it and allow the states the prerogative. This is the solution. This is the solution because if we would allow the states to write their laws, take away the jurisdiction by a majority vote in the Congress, you repeal Roe versus Wade overnight.
So, Ron Paul, in a disagreement with Rick Santorum, really, in the context of that debate over whether the federal government should step in and try to have a constitutional amendment or a federal law banning abortion, and Ron Paul, though he called abortion an act of violence there, sticking to his libertarian principles and saying states should get to decide. So
Right. And a big cheer there for him in this state where states' rights are so important, the 10th Amendment. And I thought also the first part of his answer was really based on medicine and his role as an obstetrician. And he said as an obstetrician, he was taught that when a woman was pregnant, he was treating two lives. And I thought that was also a good argument. Here on the airwaves here, he's got some ads that are running about his pro-life stance from some of his former patients. So that'll I think, do him some good here in terms of conservative evangelical voters. But I think he probably did himself a lot of harm in that former debate where he's talking about foreign policy in such an isolation, in such a non-interventionist way that it turned a lot of folks off. We got a lot of military folks down here. And so in some ways, I think he's going to have some trouble making a lot of gains in this state because of his foreign policy views.
Nia Malika Henderson, national political correspondent for The Washington Post. Before you go, Nia, I heard that in one poll, Stephen Colbert in his mock campaign was actually beating Perry with 5% of the vote to 4%. Right. How much presence does the Colbert shtick have?
Well, you know, He's going to be in Charleston today with Herman Cain, and it looks like he's from Charleston, and he's going to be up there with Herman Cain. He's calling on people to actually vote for Herman Cain. It's obviously very fun and very funny, and he's also calling attention to super PACs and how much influence they've had in this last campaign. But it's a light moment for all of us.
Is it a light moment? I mean, you know, I think for devotees of Colbert, there's a lot to take seriously there as satire, particularly against the PACs and Citizens United. But Herman Cain is going along with this. I think I should say for people who don't get it, that Colbert himself, since he's not on the ballot, he's asking people to vote for Herman Cain as
right.
a proxy for him, because
yes.
Cain's name, though he dropped out, will still be on the ballot. And Herman Cain is going along with this?
Herman Cain, apparently, I heard, yeah, I was watching Colbert, I don't know if it was last night or the night before, but he's in Charleston. His bus was parked out at a big parking lot last night, and apparently he's going along with it. I think Herman Cain enjoyed his 15 minutes of fame. He wants to extend it a little bit more, but that's what I had seen on air, that he was going along with this and riding the Colbert bandwagon and trying to get that famous Colbert bump.
Colbert is making fun of you, Mr. Cain.
Right.
Do you
yes,
not
yes.
get that?
Yes.
But I guess we will leave it there. The big question will be after Saturday, since they apportion their delegates proportionally. It's not a winner-take-all state.
Right.
Who goes on and who drops out?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I, if it turns out the way the polls are, then I guess we presume Gingrich goes on. Obviously, Romney goes on, Ron Paul goes on, and the question will become, does Santorum drop out if it turns out the way that it's polling right now, right?
Exactly. That's exactly right. Gingrich has already opened some offices in Florida. He's got his super PAC has pledged about $300,000 of ads down there. So he's going to go on. You feel like at this point Newt Gingrich is having so much fun. He looked like the happy warrior last night in this debate. And I think he's going to go on. There's going to be more proportional balloting for these states as the contest goes on. So he's got a chance to hang in this thing. The question for him, I think, is can he get a ground game and can he get more supporters, more donors to donate to his campaign.
Mia Malika Henderson, Washington Post, national political correspondent from Columbia, South Carolina. Back to the trail, Nia. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian. Take care.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC. By the way, we've just tweeted for our Twitter followers a photograph of Herman Cain's bus in South Carolina, even though he's no longer in the race. We'll talk more about the presidential race later with Gail Collins, who, among other things, will help us try to figure out what the heck is going on in Iowa, which no longer has a winner of their caucuses, and whether that actually matters to the process, and whether we in the media should be beating ourselves up for taking Iowa too seriously. So that's coming up in a little while with Gail Collins. Coming up next, City Councilwoman from New York City, Letitia James, on council efforts to mandate wages and sick leave in the city. Stay with us.